Okay. So we saw in the last shiur the Tshuvas of the Rashba, Aleph, Tuf, Resh, Yud, Zayin. What we got out of this Tshuvas of Rashba is he talked about the idea of the Shiva Tuvei Yair, the Zayin Tuvei Yair. What did he say was, how do they get their authority? What makes them the Shiva Tuvei Yair? So he had two things that were important. You can see here on the board. What's special about them? Or who are they? What gives them their stature? They're not the smartest or brightest people or richest, Daniel. What are they? Well, that was the Mizrahi. That they're appointed, right? They are the people, Shehimidu Atzibur Parnasim Stam Al Inyanei Ha'ir. They're appointed by the people of the town as Parnasim, as trustees, to preside over the Inyanei Ha'ir. V'harehein, and here's the second point. So number one, they gain their authority from being appointed. Number two, they are Kapitrupsim. What are Apitrupsim? Custodians, right, or trustees, that are guardians of the town, which means that they speak and have the authority to make decisions on behalf of the town. So we have not only that they derive their authority from being appointed, but they have the status of speaking as representatives and making decisions on behalf of the ear. Good? Yeah. So very, very straightforward, Tshuvas HaRashba. The Mizrahi that we saw in Siman Nun Gimel. By the way, somebody remind me, where's the Rashba? Locate him, date and time. Rashba, century?
1235 to
13. Nice. 13th. That's good, Dave. 13th century, where?
In Barcelona.
Yeah, Barcelona. Right, so that's Christian Spain. That's good. So then we have the Mizrahi. The Mizrahi is about 100 years later or so, right? 200 years later. 15th century. In Kushta, right? Kushta is already the Ottoman Empire, Constantinople. So what did the Mizrahi say in Siman Nun Gimel? So he made a few important points, and he actually brought to our attention what happens when there's a conflict between what the people themselves want and what the representatives of the town want, which is, I guess, it's a very nice way of teasing out the question of authority when it's divided between the source of the authority and the people delegated to make decisions on behalf of those sovereign, authoritative people. So what did he say? He says, what happens if there is daylight or gap between the Nitzid, the Apotropsin, the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, and the people themselves? And what did he say? So he says, if the Anshei Ha'ir made a decision, if the Parnasim or the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir, whatever you want to call them, made a decision, biparhesia, in public, and nobody objected, then their decision is binding. But, and why is their decision binding? So Rumi, take us through this line. What did he say? Why is that
authoritative?
But because we know that their das is aligned with the will of the kahal itself, so that's like a very necessary requisite for this for them to have authority. Aval, here's the distinction. Good. One second. So what does he say here? If we know, go ahead.
If the call is mocha and we know they don't actually want it, then whatever the Tuvei
Ha'ir
say is worthless.
Yeah. It's not that that's a problem. So I think that's an awesome shita. Right? He's basically saying that the B'nei Ha'ir themselves always retain the fundamental power, the fundamental authority, and they always could veto the choices and decisions that their representatives make on their behalf. Yes? Yeah. And what does he say? What makes things authoritative? And here's this a great phrase. Go ahead, Romy. Yeah. So he says, why? Because what really matters is what the Rov HaKahal wants. Why? Because for matters pertaining to the call itself is considered to be the Besdin for its own affairs. Right? So I think that's where this distinction we spoke about in the last year is very helpful. There's an area of halacha that's called Dvarim HaShayachim LeKahal, the social and political organization of the community. With respect to that, the kahal itself retains jurisdiction. And that's why he thinks that the kahal could always defeat the decisions made by their representatives. And again, he says in this phrase, Romy, just read this one also. Yeah, so it's again a very very clear position on that. Ned, do you have a comment on this?
Yeah. Does it have to be like an informed majority opinion?
What do you mean? The kahal itself?
Yeah, I mean, later on in the Mabit, there's a line there where he says that the majority should have some sort of support from some common halakha.
Yeah.
Majority
mob rule,
like,
for the Mizrahi.
Are we going to apply certain Torah principles to determine what should be?
It sounds like for the Dvar Mashiachim LeKahal, Kol HaKol B'Chol Nikram Besdin. Right, and remember again, the Mizrahi himself said that the Tuve Ir are just the, you know, the people to whom the people of the Ir look to as their Askanim, right? Not the Yoser Chachamim, not the Yoser Nivonim. So I think in the Mizrahi himself that this, yes, you get, there's this pure rove of the kahal. Unless, is that, is, do you get a different impression from the Mizrahi?
No, I just find it extremely odd.
Odd?
Yeah.
Why?
I find it odd that whatever the majority decides, it's like a completely valid, it could be a completely valid this decision. It's just whatever majority decides. It's not pure.
So you're skeptical of pure majoritarianism.
Yeah.
Okay. But it's definitely a view, or you think it can't be a view. It's just a concerning view. That's... Shmuel?
How seriously do you take Nikram Besdin? Because, like...
Very, very, very seriously.
You know, because I just asked because, like, Kamdina and Hagardina is, like, on my mind after the past couple of weeks. And, like, you get into trouble there because, like, in theory...
Could the call flip-flop?
Right, my intuition would be like majority rule. At any time, like, they can change their mind, and therefore we go at like whatever the current state is.
Ah.
Call them business.
That's a really interesting question. So how do we take kol hakol b'chol nikraim besdin? I think that something I just haven't really worked through yet, but just as an intuitive sense, I think that this idea of the shame, this idea of besdin has so many wide... and varying types of usages that, yes, it's considered a Besdin, but the concept of a Besdin in Halacha serves many different purposes.
So it's not like Dina, like come Dina.
Well, it might be Dina, right? It's I guess even in America, you would say like courts, right? Courts is one type of base din. A legislature is a different type of base din, right? The lawmakers, like the executive branch would be another type of base din, I guess, like a parliament, right, and a prime minister.
Arbitration boardrooms are another base din.
Yeah, right. So I think actually it's okay. Base din doesn't have to always connote like the specific shoftim type of base din. And I think he means it seriously. Like they have legal, it means like that, the legal authority to make decisions. So no, I think it, there's an argument to say that those types of Besdin rules could apply to this type of Besdin. Like maybe for them too, there's a value in not flip-flopping, right? I don't know, unless maybe you'd say Kamdina only applies to a subset of Batei Din. But I do think this is a very fascinating phrase, one that we're going to see in other Rishonim also. Okay? Did this phrase stand out to any of you? Yeah? Karen?
I didn't know what to do with it.
You didn't know what to do with that.
I mean, like, it sounds important. Like, I don't know, like, what it means other than, like, put an exclamation point and saying, Kahal has the power.
Right.
Exclamation.
Ah.
What else is powerful? I don't know.
Well, it does naturally justify why Achai Rabba Mahatos would apply to Rov HaKahal, which is something borrowed from, court decisions. So this would naturally explain why Rov HaKahal has the authority. But beyond that, it's an interesting question. What's the halachic significance of him using that phrase, Nikraim Besdin? So I think it's a great point, Shmuel. Josh?
Yeah, I was going to say that. I read it pretty weakly. Like, I thought it was just regardless of the majority, because, you know, they're like a victim. I didn't think that it connoted more than just going after the majority.
Mishum, so he says, we follow the Rov HaKal, Mishum, because in all matters pertaining to the call, the entire call, the sovereign call, or all the constituents are called Bezdin. And you're saying that just...
Like, I took it to mean like...
This is like an analogy.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's not even a Kafadimion.
He's not actually calling them a Bezdin, like, for, like, other things like Kamdina and stuff.
Because what's a Bezdin to your mind?
No, my intuition is the same as yours.
Yeah.
Like, it's problematic.
Yeah? Oh, man.
I actually read it with the next line. I think, like, the new paragraph is a little misleading.
Nekron based in... Vitzarech
l'ham
shacharev des. Interesting. So it's just... No, I don't think that's true. Because I think... here he's just trying to explain why you go... No, I don't think that's right. Because I think he's trying to explain why you go basa the deos ha'kohol rather than the tuve yair. Not just... I don't think in that line he's explaining... Rove versus unanimity. I think that next line is saying that's how we follow the because the call is sovereign. That's how we follow them, not their representatives. That's how I read it. Daniel, you had a comment on this?
Do you need a Bezdin to appoint a Petrikus?
Not necessarily. No.
No.
I don't think so. No. You're saying that would if he did, then that would. The question is, why does he need to say this, right? He probably could say everything he wants to say without going here. But I think I would take it seriously, and especially if we see other Rishonim taking it up. Romy?
Well, I think he needs to say it. It's a little bit like he doesn't have a reason why that's true. Why is it that the Kaal is, you know, a little bit cold, but like anything linked to the Kaal, they're like all powerful. So it's a little bit like he's saying, ah, Tao, I can read. Like he's kind of saying on Vada without explaining.
You think Bezdin is just like
just saying like, yeah, it's really true without actually intuitive sense.
You know, I'm interested in probing the commitments that you guys have such that it makes it difficult for you to take this seriously. That's what I'd be interested in probing. But I think we'll do any of you want to explicate maybe why this you can't why it's hard Ned?
Back to what I was saying earlier. If we say it should be Beit Din, then there's certain standards we consider a Beit Din. Can't throw the Beit Din.
Well, there could be, but they didn't, because we know there's a Bezdin of Shlosha. Yeah.
Okay.
So you could say, oh, the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin doesn't talk about this type of Bezdin. Right? But I'll say, well, the Mishnah in Sanhedrin is talking about a Bezdin for Makin Vonshin Minhadin. Right? But then there's this other thing that's, I guess, a Bezdin that's with respect to the Inyani HaKal, and Sanhedrin is not about Inyani HaKal. Sanhedrin is about, other halachos. And you're saying there can't be the species of a Bezdin for Dvar Mashiach and Lakal? Is that what you're... You think, then what does the word Bezdin mean at that point? Is that the thought? Yes, we have to keep our minds open.
They don't have any of the powers of the Bezdin.
What?
They don't have any powers of the Bezdin, and
why
don't
would
have
you
any of the yeah, right.
Why would I want to call that?
So there's no similarities to Bezdin at all, except that they're governing, they like have some power.
Okay, but even that is an interesting... Let's think...
Especially according to the... Especially
yeah, go ahead.
According to the... Like, if you really do want to make the chiluk of the, you know, the Drosh Aram kind of chiluk.
Okay. So let's come back to this question about what this concept connotes. Okay, so let's look at the Marach or Zeruah very quickly. This is, I think, new material for today. I think the Marach or Zeruah actually leans a little bit in the opposite direction of the Mizrahi about what happens when you have conflict between the decision of the Kahal itself and the representatives of the Kahal. So this was a case about, I think, selling a Beis HaKnesses on behalf of the Kahal, and the Shiva Tuve Ha'ir did it on their own. By the way, who's the Marach or Zerua?
Son of the
Arzerua. So where are we in the world?
One of the 1200s, I think.
Yeah, 1250 to 1310.
Round the Black Death.
A little before. That seems like the close to the time of the Ram, but he's German. Yeah, Talmud of Maran. Good. So we're in this is classic German Ashkenaz here. The Or Zohar himself, you should know, ended up in Vienna, which is pretty east for somebody that early.
It's pretty German.
Yeah, in Austria. Yeah. There's an Or Zohar shul there, supposedly. They say that the Or Zohar presided over. Okay, so the Reb Chaim Or Zohar, who's the son of the Or Zohar, so he says, what happened here? Bisha'a, what happened? Zecharia, tell us about it.
So when two people here sold the shul, either people heard about it and they were silent, or actually maybe they didn't even hear about it. And
yeah.
Nevertheless, it's fine. Okay.
Correct. So he wants to say that even if the Bnei Ha'ir had no clue what the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir did, they're bound by the Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir. Okay. And what does he say? Vatam.
Vatam, ki kol bnei ha'ir nigrar achar toveihem, lo shiu kol toveihem yacha b'shas maisa, ela zayin mi toveihir ogelam mi nisa.
It's actually a radical view, right? He seems to think that you don't even need rove. He seems to think that it's a sufficiency condition, that once you have seven tuvei ha'ir or zayin mi beis hakneses, that's sufficient for them to do things on behalf of it. It's like a quorum. If you have a shul board meeting or a communal board meeting, as long as you get three or seven for shul or community respectively, that's adequate for them to make decisions on behalf of the kahal, even if the kahal has no clue what they're doing. I'd say it's actually a very strong view about the powers of the representatives distinct from they don't need the consent of the kahal themselves. And then he says, afilu, so whatever they do is valid, afilu. Yeah, so that's a pretty radical position. Once these people are appointed, they could do what they want for the kahal, and if no one is mocha right away, it's not clear what would happen if they're mocha right away, but here, the people didn't know about it, and then they tried to undo it a bit later, too bad. Right, these nitzigim these representatives have the authority. So I think this is a very strong view. It seems to be against the Mizrahi, because the Mizrahi seem to require that the Tuvei Ha'ir act in public with the consent or with the knowledge of Rov B'nei Ha'ir. Morach Or Zohar does not require that. But he does say something else interesting on a very different note. He says, well, what's the significance of Shiva Tuvei Ha'ir? It's not to make it public, because he doesn't care about that public, right? Congress can make rules, in his view, in closed sessions that the public doesn't know about. She just has an interesting insight. What's the significance of seven, Zecharia?
It's not because we have seven, by default, you assume it'll be publicized, which was his first answer. Once you have seven people dealing and discussing a matter, they'll know how to get to the true conclusion. What is the true improvement or fix for the city?
Yeah, it's good for the deliberations, right? So the thought is, you get seven people together, that'll get good deliberations, and you'll get good social outcomes. That's the Morach Or Zohar's view. He does say, though, because he's worried about, If seven Tuvei Ha'ir is just an adequacy or a sufficiency condition, such that any seven people can make conditions on behalf of the kahal, so you could have a real problem. What's the problem?
Uniqueness, and you have two different groups of seven Tuvei Ha'ir.
Exactly, right? So you get, imagine we just said, all you need is 40 members of Congress to make rules. So you'll get, 40 members can make a rule on day one, and then 40 other members can make a rule on day two. That's totally at odds with the different set that made the rule on day one, right? Does everybody see that? So you have no leader. It's not clear who gets to make the rules. So he does say, Bishvil Machlokes, it's funny that he thinks it's like a side issue. You know, because Machlokes, because it's an unwieldy rule, you could make a takana to do what? Right, so the call could designate authority exclusively and say that only these seven people have the power, so that seven other people can't get up and defeat them. I think that's what he's suggesting here. Mikivan shenivru kol asher yasa, meaning it's not enough for seven independent tuveir to defeat them. Daniel?
Is he saying that theoretically they wouldn't need to be designated? They could just...
Yeah. I think that's his view. I think his view...
in the first paragraph, actually.
Yeah. That there's just like these seven tuveir who could show up to town councils.
How do you define a tuveir? How do you define a tuveir?
He doesn't give us much insight.
Right. If you're one of them, you know.
Yeah, right. And if you're asking the question, then you're right. I think this is a very strange thing that he doesn't explicate who these two Vayir are, right? So, yeah, it's interesting.
He rereads the Stam,
which is even more of a chiddush that he thinks that they have the capacity to bind the kahal, right? That's pretty. Like they're not express. He doesn't say that they're expressly elected and. So he's just giving this very absolute strong authority to these subsets.
He says, they read the Yusham and says, oh, when do you need seven to the ear? If Stam.
It's a strange Stam reading of the Rav, yeah.
He just got up.
Right. That's not the standard reading of the Rav, yeah. The standard reading of the Rav, yeah, is that you designate them to have Stam authority. As opposed to they were never designated.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was saying you face them all this.
It's interesting. You need to think about that. Josh?
Do you think this is maybe a little bit like Yoridi in the sense that it's like people coming together, like trying to figure out what's good for everyone? If they protest beforehand, then the protest is good.
Ah.
Like, if they protest afterwards, like maybe
it's too late.
Yeah, right. Maybe like similar.
Seven people by default have the.
Yeah, like we assume that was what's good. I don't know.
Possible, yeah. It's hard to know, though. It's,
yeah.
But you could see, he himself at the end realizes it creates a problem, right? Because how do you control which seven?
Right.
So. Okay, but that's a really. That part of the tshuva is really a minority view. I just wanted to highlight number one, that he thinks you don't require the consent of the people, so against the Mizrahi. And therefore they can't reject what the representatives did after. Okay, so now we move to the Rashba in Gimel Tuf Mem Gimel. This is about a community that had leaders who wanted to raise money for a shul. So it's a tax to fund the Beis HaKnesses. And then the issue here, anybody remember the issue in this tshuva? In Gimel Tuf Mem Gimel, Daniel?
It ended up being too much money, and they didn't want to finish it.
Yeah, so it's a classic budget issue that the representatives wanted to raise too much money, and the kahal didn't want to pay all that. V'yachshav rotzim ha'kal v'abrum lahatir acherem l'fisha ol hamas kaved b'nyan beis haknesses chazak. So it's too much for them to bear. So how does the Rashba analyze this? So he starts off. By saying, of course you don't need the whole community to be there. So part, what was the objection in the tshuva, Daniel? Do you remember? Why this takrana shouldn't be valid?
Made this deal to renovate the shul, only a lot of minority of members only there when they need it.
Exactly. So actually the shoel here says maybe we could get out of this tax because the entire community wasn't there in attendance for the session when the representatives imposed a tax on the kahal.
He also mentions the Chamisha Gdolei Hamas, five greatest taxes.
And only four out of five of them were there.
He says, mixes, like that means only four of them?
He says, he explicates four a little bit. He says... B'shas acherem lo haisa b'kal lo haisa b'es haknesses machtis hakal. So half the call wasn't there for the initial takana. U'miktas min hachamisha gedolei emas. And some of the gedolei emas weren't there. I thought later on he says...
Later on he says four.
Yeah. Saying how did the Rashba know that it was four?
You need the majority of them?
Here. Or here he says, Mikamach yisham him gedolei emas min hachamisha sham amdu harba. So four out of the five showed up.
What if there were three? Is that not enough?
We don't know. It just seems the facts of the case was that it was four out of the five, I think. That's how I understood this. So the question is, can you make a takana that binds the whole call if not all of the representatives are there and certainly not every member of the call? Yes, everybody? And actually the rationale in the question to defeat the takana of raising money for the Beis HaKnesses is that not everybody was there. Right? So what did the Rashba argue? Is the Rashba sympathetic to the fact that this takana was not made in the presence of everyone?
No.
He's not sympathetic to that. What does he say? Because, what does he say?
When they designate them, they like pass in all the, every issue is being passed to the two right here.
Yeah, he's not even explicit about the designation here.
Right, he just says that they pass over the, like, the power to make the decision.
Yeah, or even more explicitly says, ki inyane hakahal misurim heim ligadolim ulemiktsas minakal sheheim ka'apitropsim l'shar acherim shemim komam. When it comes to these communal issues, we don't really care about an actual majority. We care about what the important majority of the representatives think. So the Rashba here just takes it for granted, of course, that it's the leadership that matters, not the constituency. Did everybody get that from the tshuva?
I don't know what that meant. I thought it was just like, not that there's any particular like, two main here going on here, it's just that a minority of the people showed up for the vote, and it's like, okay, well, but the majority, them not showing up for the vote, they're just saying, okay, we trust by default whatever the minority ends up voting for.
So let's look at this more carefully then. So I think this phrase is the most important. He says that when it comes to all matters of the kahal, it's given over to the gdolim and to the minority that are the trustees. Right? So he's saying you don't need rove. That's his first movement. Then he says, oh, and by the way, there are cases where you could have a community of 1,000 constituents, but only 30 or 40 show up for the vote, right? And we don't say that that any time a community wants to get something done, you need a general assembly of everyone actually attending. What's his argument? Because if you were to require that, Daniel,
then that won't get done.
Exactly. That's it. That's all his argument. That's the thrust of his argument. It's like it would be impossible to get things done if you actually needed a true majority of the kahal in every case. Sorry, you read this differently, but look what he says. Daniel, Shane?
I think your read is correct.
What?
I think your read is
is better?
Yeah. Dan calls them like, make the sound, as in, what is the sound going to call? As in, he's actually referring to a specific group. Like,
correct. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Daniel, read the Shane Manat Omer Kain.
Kulam.
And you think that's absurd, right? You're not going to be the community can't make any decisions until everybody gets together.
Right.
Are you guys sympathetic to that argument?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good argument, right? Now, I think the yeshiva bachur and you should say, what do you mean? If that's what the Torah requires, then that's what the Torah requires. Like, so we'll all get together every time we have to make a takana.
Right.
Like,
no? But the Greeks could do it, why can't we?
Right.
Yeah.
No, it says.
No.
I remember I was giving a shiur in Englewood, and I was talking about how a Bezin case. And I said, well, if we were to, it's like the Rav Zalman Nechemya article. With the Rav Kook story, right? By the way, the best part of that story is that he says, Ezu maskil or goy, asked Rav Kook. It's like, I don't remember if it was a goy or a maskil last time. It's like a funny interchangeable character. I said, like, if we were to pursue this line of reasoning, it would have been really expensive to get the data to figure out what the right amount was when the case itself was only like a $10,000 case, right? So we're going to spend $30,000 to solve a $10,000. I remember one of the Balbatsim was like, what do you mean? If that's what Din requires, then that's what the Torah requires. Like, why is that absurd to spend $30,000? Like, to pursue MS, you should spend any money that's necessary. So I think there is an argument. You could make an argument along those lines. So you could say the Rashba, okay, it's so unwieldy, but that's what the Torah requires. No? Nobody here is sympathetic to that? Ned? No? So I just want to point out that Rashba clearly is not thinking along those lines. He's just saying, it would be too cumbersome, right? The transaction costs of making takanos would be prohibitively high. That's basically what he's saying here. And that's a reductio ad absurdum. Not only that, he says you need the woman to show up to assemblies. You see this? Ache yaskimu bedavar kulam v'hanashim ke'anashim. Kimi yigzar al mamonam below reshusam. So it would really have to be a general assembly, including everybody, and that's going to be impossible to get everybody together. So Elamai must be, here's his conclusion from the reductio, it's just the Gedolei Amas and the Ktsas min HaKol, who are Kruei Eda, they're considered the Apotropsim al-Geser HaKol. So I just want to point out, there's no appeal here to Rubo Kekulo, there's no appeal here to Acher Rabbi Mahatos. It's just the logic of the feasibility of communal enactments. That's the mode of argument that the Rashba advances. Benji and then Romy.
I think this line of reasoning makes a lot of sense because from like the Hakdama, where we have the chilek between Beit Din and the Melech, right? The powers of the Melech are to be like more practical, whereas the Beit Din is like a real searching for truth.
Ah.
So once you want to try to impute like Beit Din kind of procedures onto the Melech, well then you've like ruined the entire point of doing this in the
Melech. Ah, so I like what Benji's saying. Benji's saying how appropriate it is that he's not going in the route of the Mizrahi to say, oh, Achi Rabba Mahatos, because there's a shame bezdin for the call on their own needs.
Right.
The Rashba was actually going a different route and saying, look, the whole purpose of this area of halacha is for social functioning. It would be pretty problematic if like the way to function is unfunctionable. So it's dafka non-bezdin argument, right? It's like it's an argument internal to the logic of the Mishpat HaMelech Tzarchei Ha'ir. Yes?
Yeah.
Isn't that a very elegant argument? Just write your paper on just that little argument right there. I like it. I think it's very elegant. Yeah. Good. I like that. Anybody comment on Benji's point? Nice point.
I thought it was a nice point.
Yeah. That's great. Romy, you had a comment.
Yeah, I
try to one up Benji's point.
I just don't get why the Miksas HaKol either.
The Bechlal.
Yeah.
I think the Miksas HaKol is actually not a. So this is what I think Zachariah was pointing out.
Good.
It's not a Miksas HaKol as in here's the Kol and then here's some subset, like an unspecified Miksas. I think it's the Miksas HaKol is the Miksas HaKol Shehin Kapitrops on the Shar HaKol.
So what's the beginning? What's the Gedolim?
Where are you?
In the right where you have highlighted the word before?
Yeah. You know how the Serum came with Gedolim, meaning the leaders, the HaKol.
But which of those are the Shuvit or the Tuvei?
Hard to know.
I mean, I guess what I actually mean is when one of them is Tuvei, what is the other?
Right, I guess he's thinking that the shul board, is always is going to be like, who are the people who get to represent the kahal? So it's got to be the gedolim, like the best members.
You think they're both gedolim?
Yeah, exactly. I think he means that it's comprised, or let's say the roshei ha'ir are comprised of the gedolim and the mikzvah min hakol or kapitropsim, right? Meaning, I guess people who buy dessert. And then, like, the people who are just, like, arbitrary representatives, not like that. That's how I read it. But it's not Miksas, just, like, you need some symbolic minority there. It's Miksas Shehem Kapitropsim HaKol. That's how I read it. Okay, good. Great. I think it's also interesting, by the way, that, just to advance a left-wing feminist agenda... I'm kidding. It is interesting here that he thinks, though, that in principle the kahal includes the decision-making capacity of the men and women separately, right? Because he says, "Mi yigzar al mamonam below reshusam." I think that's the right way to read that line, right? How could the kahal? He's saying if you would really require unanimity, then you would require a true unanimity of men and women because. Is that right?
What's the other side?
The other way to read it is...
I mean, like, not the other way to read it. I mean, I don't know, I feel like that's kind of question, no?
1 second. Yeah, because you could say, like a man and woman. Because who could make hakanas on people's money without their rishas? But it's not just referring to the nashim. I don't know, it doesn't really matter. I think the meaning is still pretty much the same.
Is it a source for women's suffrage?
They should have a capacity to...
Right.
Well, it is. I think it is interesting because I could hear somebody argue and say that when you talk about the kahal, maybe it only includes the anashim.
Maybe they just have to be present when the decision-making is done. They don't actually have a say in the decision.
He says, Ache yaskimu. He says, Ache yaskimu bedavar kulam. No? Zoldi, doesn't it say, Ache yaskimu bedavar kulam? The anashim ke anashim?
No,
so like, you consent, right?
It's the comma after kulam, and then like, okay, now nashim, that they have to see.
Well, the rishusim is nonsense.
Well,
that has to be with the rishusim, so we will have them there with no say. Is it killing
the bell?
It has to do something. It's a strong twisting of the word rishusim into their
right
unvoiced
assent. Right, saying rishusim means like active permission.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a nice diagdote. Okay, so let's move to the mabit now. So let's get this. The Mabit is the, I would say, the best of these tshuvas, or the most interesting of these tshuvas. Did you guys feel that way? I thought the Mabit was really... Eitan, are you supposed to have a lunch?
Someone's.
Oh, Wednesday. Okay. You know, the whole weekend, I was thinking, you know, Eitan's going to mishir because someone's coming down from... Where are they coming from? Chicago? And back here, I'm coming from Philadelphia. I was like, why is the guy from Chicago have priority over my coming from Philadelphia? Right. I really lost sleep over this. You can talk. No, it just occurred to me, yeah, like, this morning for a second. So the Mabit... Well...
Chicago's
farther. Yeah, Chicago is farther. Your friend probably got on a plane or something. Yeah? Well...
Yeah, he flew to Boston, then Boston.
Oh, so it's really just a commute from Boston. This farther. So we have the Mabit. So who's the Mabit? Quick reminder. Rav Moshe ben Yosef Trani. I gave you the bio at the bottom. So we're 16th century, a little bit in the Ottoman Empire, and Eretz Yisrael, contemporary of the Beis Yosef, right? So we're in the early period of the Achronim, but he's also in Kushta. Right, so back in Constantinople, Istanbul. Yeah, this is, he's very involved in the Machlokas Hasmicha. Yeah, Mari Beirav, very exciting controversy. I think this tshuva is just marvelous. So tell me the facts of the case. What were the facts of the case? Josh Hurt, do you remember the facts of the case?
No.
You sure?
The community wants to prevent breakaway shuls.
Yes. Well, the community wants to prevent breakaway shuls.
Okay. My assumption is one shul broke away and they decided we're having no more of this.
Oh, so one second. Just the facts. Just the facts. The fact.
Okay. For the last breakaway, you know.
So just the facts. So what do we have? We have a shtar, right, that's signed. So it's like a proclamation, right?
A proclamation. No shuls for taxpayers and all the tzedakah collects. I speak to the community of the authority of these shuls.
Yeah, but notice, so it starts off, right, Banu bibris shalom shalom v'ava v'achva anachnu kila kedosha kal lurka v'kila kedosha kal Toledo. So it says we, the community of X and the community of Y, have, you know, come together and we form this agreement, right, Dov?
Yeah.
So this is the ambiguity, the self-declared subject. It's like we, the people of the United States, right? And then it's like signed by like four random. So that's what happens here. It's signed up. It's stated as being the kehila, but it's only signed by this guy Meir Gabai, this guy Avram something, Yitzhak something, David Shoshan, Yonah Chaviv, and Yosef Brofiel. Right. So you have these like random people signing. Maybe a few of them were involved in the kehila, but it's not clear that they speak on behalf of the kahal. And as Dov said, they had this takana. That for 20 years, right, anybody who lives in this town is not going to form a breakaway shul. Right, Dov?
Yeah.
They're not going to daven in a breakaway. They're not going to make donations to some breakaway entity. So you can see it really an attempt to centralize the kehila. Yes? Dov?
Yeah.
So what was the issue? The issue was, are people bound, are all the members of this community bound by this proclamation? And it seems like you have some people who actually did break away. Is that how you read the Teshuvah, Dov? Yes?
Yeah.
Seems like some people did break away, and people started calling them Avaryanim, but they said we were never bound by this proclamation, and that was the dispute. So what is the Mabit answer?
No.
Well?
Basically, no.
That they're not bound by the...
This whole document has no authority.
Yeah, so let's see why. So take us through the first part of the Teshuvah.
Another question would be, in common, but in the year of the kind of cult, like, you know, keep in your shoes, you're out in cult, and you have here, oh, but I'll call Asian, or I'll be Torah, I'll be around the Mahatis.
Yeah, so very strong view, he said, that there's no decision-making authority independent of the Ratzon of Kol B'nei Ha'ir Oruba. So he doesn't care about the representatives. He cares about what is the Das and Ratzon of the actual constituents of the community. Did everybody take that from the Mabit? So he sides with the people. And then he says, wait, there's a whole series of Tshuvos of the Rishonim. He says the Rashba, Rivash, Arash. That they all require Rov, that's fine. He cites Rubo Kikulo. But then he says, what about the general power of representatives? Could representatives speak on behalf of the people? And what is the answer to that, Dov?
Well, starting as in which part? The start of the buyer?
Yeah. What's his answer to that?
That they need popular support.
Exactly. Dafka, what does he say?
Dafka Rova Tibor Gu.
Exactly. So the Rov Ha'ir always wins, even against their elected their representatives. And he then cites these Tshuvos of the Rishonim. And what does he conclude on that basis? This is the most important one of the most important phrases here. Yeah. Does everybody see that? The Zion Tuve Ha'ir have no legal authority unless they're backed up by a consensus of Rove of their constituents. Right, that's a really remarkable view. You know, in Israel, this is playing out now because Bennett is prime minister, which even though he only got like a tiny number of votes, so people say, oh, that makes it like illegitimate, right? Because you don't really have the support of a substantial constituents. There, it's a little more complicated. But that's the type of issue that comes up here, right? Do you look to the Ratzon of the constituents independent of how they delegated authority to the representatives? So he says the Tuve Ha'ir actually need Rov Bahadayu. What's the significance of Shiva Tuve Ha'ir in this theory?
They're generally assumed to... for convenience. They can do it.
Exactly.
Then they will gauge the public response after.
Exactly. So they don't have any inherent authority.
Direct democracy is hard, so you might as well just get some people who...
100%. It sounds totally pragmatic. Do you guys agree with that?
Well, it gives them a veto power after, later. It says they're necessarily not sufficient later on.
The suggestion that they could have some veto against the Rov, like a check in the way Ned wanted.
Yeah.
Later on, he'll say that. But at this point...
At this point,
they're just like, they're the clerks, right? They draft the stuff, but the thing that gives it the legal oomph and authority is the fact that the Rov Ha'ir stands behind it. Okay, and then he says over here, some Rishonim sound like the Shiva Tuve Ha'ir have intrinsic authority. He says, that's not true. Kilo, you always need Rov. It's a very strong position. Go ahead, Dov. Yeah, but it's really just insofar as they have the backing of the Kahal. Okay? And then he says over here, citing the Yushalmi, he says you might distinguish between two different cases about how much authority was delegated to the Tuve Ha'ir. And he says, I think this is the question that came up in the last year about like a shul board today. What type of authority are they presumed to have? Right? Are they considered memunim al kol in Yonei Ha'ir? Or just on the types of things that people normally expect to come up in the course of their leadership? So he says, first of all, if these people are appointed stam, okay, then they can make takanos, but the takanos are not authoritative on their own. What do they have to do? Letaken v'ligzar masha yirlahem, and then v'yodim, go ahead, Dov. Yeah, so here he's explicit that they should like draft the stuff, make a public proclamation about it, but it's always subject to either the ratification or veto of the members of the town. Right, so there's no authority given to the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir on their own and in their own right. Okay, everybody agree with that analysis? Romy, you agree with that?
Yeah, is that different than the draft deal?
Is that different substantively from the Mizrahi's view? Yes. I think because I don't think the Mizrahi required this explicit requirement that they notify the Kohal about what the Takana is. Is that right? I think the Mizrahi said that the Rov HaKohal could veto it. So if there's a disagreement between them, the Rov HaKohal wins. But here he's saying that the Kohal, that the Zayin Tuvei Ha'ir have to, when they make a takana, they just have to publicize it, and it's subject to the ratification or rejection of the Kohal. So it's much more contingent from the get-go. The way I understood the Mizrahi is that they can make a takana. If the Kohal impeaches it or vetoes it, then that's valid. But here it's like the takana itself is only valid al Tanai that im yishtiku velo yisaru yakayim. But he requires viyodium, that the initial takana notify the kahal about its content. So I think that's an added requirement, which makes the initial takana much more subject to the implicit ratification. Skarga?
Noah made a point to me that it's like a kind of interesting comment, like the role of the press in like democracy, and just like kind of like because C-SPAN exists, maybe that's where Congress gets their power from. If everything's happening in secret, maybe like
the journalists definitely see their role in that light. They think that they're a vital institution of democracy, yeah. Right? Because if people don't know what the Senate and the government's doing, then it's not really ruled by the people. Yeah, I think that's a great point from Noah. I like that point very much. That's the necessity of viyodium.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, you guys agree with that?
No, like just handing off keys and forgetting about it.
Yeah. Josh?
I would say there's a lot of things that the people have no idea of. Like, either they have no opinion or they have no qualifications to have an opinion on. Wouldn't you say that? Like,
the people always have a right to have an opinion because it's
even
there.
Even if there are things that they have no way of actually having, like I guess this is like Ben's point. But like,
that's the Mizrahi's point. They're the Dayanim on their own lives.
For circa a year. Every time we're discussing something of like great importance, like I don't know, foreign policy and stuff like that. I don't know, who cares what the public thinks? Like, what do they know?
Tell me, discuss and like political debate. Like,
you might say that's a reason why the public should consult experts. Does that take away their like? Fundamental bias over the
or like
issue.
When my town has like a library board meeting, but and nobody in the town actually cares what the library board does. So like, I don't know.
It's interesting. It's interesting to try to go a little deeper here and figure out like which Rishonim endorsed the like idea that the Bnei Ha'ir themselves are sovereign, with the idea that like Rishonim, I guess like the Marach or Zeruah view, to.
He also had an interesting idea of who gets to vote to choose the leaders. I think he like was pretty restrictive there too. So like only the Muganim, the Chachamim, the Sakinim get to vote for who the leader
forgets to be the Netzigan. That would be consistent with him like not seeing the Bnei Ha'ir themselves as sovereign over the Tzarfei Ha'ir. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think I had that in the Makor sheet?
It's in there.
I have to go back to that. Okay, so let's see. So what does the Mabit then suggest practically for this case? What has to be determined? He says, what do you have to go decide? Does anybody remember? You have to go see whether or not the people who signed on the Takana...
Are they affirming this was agreed upon, or are they affirming that they think this is the case?
Exactly. So he says, so here he says at one point, Tzarech she'yivarer she'hayu az heim tuvei ha'ir, she'kiblum kulam arum afilu b'sam. Number one, you have to check whether the people who signed, whether they actually were appointed as the representatives of the Kahal. But then he goes even further... And he says, blah, blah, blah. Here. Kol shelo yivaru shekiv ma'alehem bozo zman. If, in fact, these people were not explicitly chosen to have this authority, then what happens? He says, Einam yichol matakim alakol. They have no takana making power. Oh, what's the other possibility? What's another? What way would the takana be effective if these people were not elected explicitly to have this authority?
Broader legislation, basically.
What?
Broader legislation.
Exactly, that we can show that achar kach hodiu es haskama lechol hakahal al yidei hachraza, they made some public announcement saying this is what we were doing. V'chulam orubam sabru v'kiblu, and majority of the kahal explicitly adopted it. So either you got to check to make sure they were appointed specifically to have this authority, or if they weren't, if it turns out they weren't appointed as such, then the only way for it to be valid is if the kahal explicitly adopted it in some public assembly. Okay? And if either of these, both of these things are untrue, then there's no force to the haskama. Then he has one other pointer which I thought was really fascinating. This is the question that was raised in the last year. Oh. What constitutes a designation to have authority over this type of a takana? On the assumption that if they were designated to have this power, then the takana could speak for the name, for the kahal itself. What would constitute what type of specificity do you need for a takana like this? So this came up. Who raised this comment about, let's say, could your shul board make COVID takanos? Because nobody really contemplated them having that type of social political authority. Who raised this? Romy, you raised it? So do you catch it to my bit? Basically raises this over here. He says, if it turns out that they were hired to be in charge of the community to make takanos, he says, Lo manu osam al hastam el latakin bidvarim hamitsuyim. We could only assume that they were given authority to make takanos, even if they were given takana making authority. We could only assume they were given takana making authority for the types of takanos that are common. Velo also al das hakihilos shemanum. Was this the type of takana that the appointers would have foreseen and therefore explicitly designated to these representatives? So this is a very crucial distinction where he says, look, you might say, oh, you guys are in charge of making all takanas for the community. But if this is the type of takana that's so out of whack with what's normally made by representatives, then we're not going to assume that this specific takana making power was allocated to them. Do you guys see that? Yeah. And he says over here, just to follow up on that, based on this, Kivan Shahisa Askama Bidavar Sheino Matsui, Ein Koach Biyad Hamimunim Litakna. So they're not going to have power to do this. Gam ki hurshu minakihilos lefakeach al tzuracheha. So you get this very significant distinction between even when you're when you're granted explicit social and political authority to make takanos, it's circumscribed to the types of takanos that are normal for a community like this. So, Romy, what do you think you would say on the shul board making, travel restrictions for the community?
I would assume not,
right? Because you assume that the authority lies in the constituents themselves. Not you would not have assumed that they designated it to the leadership if it was so unexpected. But he says, "Davar sheino matzoi, ein koach b'yad ha'mimunim." Ned.
How are those decisions decided? In the absence of
representative body? At the robot call itself.
Who brings up the vote?
What?
Who brings up the vote?
Who gets to decide?
Who brings up the vote? I mean, how are these things even started?
Clap at the kiddush.
On the BA, you clap on the bima for Kriyas HaTorah. No? Maybe for a Musaf. No, I'm serious. I think that's like the thought is that there is some communal assembly and they would put it up for a vote there. Yes?
There's one thing I can think of.
It's like Locke says somewhere in the end of the second treatise that if there's a dispute between different powers of government, like between the monarch and the legislature, so the people get to decide that dispute, I think. Because whenever there's like a suffix about who has the power, like the people who are sovereign get to decide. So like whenever something's not designated or it's a suffix, what's delegated, then you just go back to the rope and ayir again. Which Ned, I think, is very reasonable. You're such an elitist.
Yeah.
Why do you have to be educated to make decisions? What? Which way? You're saying like in the government?
But no, community practices in the past year.
Which community?
I'm trying to keep it on
track.
Dove. On the topic, I mean, basically, makes an announcement in Shul to, from like, basically, arrange a meeting on the topic there I think in a couple of weeks or something like that. So I'd assume, I think it's reasonable to assume there's some kind of similar enough thing where you go and you say what Hashem is saying, and that's the word spreads around.
Yeah, 100%. There's some sort of achraza. And you can see that's actually his maskani. He says, in this case, because he thinks this was so rare, meaning if the call said, we're giving you authority to make takanos over non-competes in the shul business, then fine, then they could have power, because they're explicitly designated that. And I think he would think that the call could probably defeat that also. He says, but if they were, because this is such a rare type of a takana, we don't assume they're given that authority. So even if they're Mimuna Alakilos, Srichim Levar Gamkin, Shehodiu Lakal, Vishe Eskimu Vinisratsu Roba Kalakal, Masha Piknu. So you require the explicit consent of Rov HaKal for the takana to have any force. That's his maskana, actually. So I think this is a really strong view, limiting the power of the Netzigim and reducing everything to really the das and to the veto power, and even requiring the ratification of the Rov HaKal. Romy, you had a...
I'm not sure why it matters whether or not to vote to vote either, then. Right? If it's clear that the community doesn't want it, then it's irrelevant whether or not they're the to vote.
If it's clear the community did not want it, then even if they are appointed, it's no good. That's true.
So why is he... Right? No, we were saying before. That's on a while.
Are you going back up here?
Yeah, there.
No, I'm doing my room. Alright, Tzarek Levar, Tzarek Levar, how you ask to the year? Shekiblum kulum uruva filibistam. Well, he's trying to say that even if they were the Tuve Ha'ir, even if you had the right number of people, you have to establish that they were... you're saying once he rejects this lamaskana...
Which he already did.
I don't think he already rejected it this high up. Meaning here he's trying to say if they have explicit designation to have this authority, then maybe they would...
He said, below Yisaru, right?
So you're saying once he already requires the approval of the kahal, when you're kiblum stam for kol davar, why does he go to this? So you want to know, once they're not mechuyav and mekayma, I think this, you'd have to figure out why this sentence is inserted here. That's what you're asking. Let me think about that. I think it's an interesting exegetical question, but I don't think it changes the reading of the mabit, maskana. Let me think about this sentence. Okay, any other comments on the mabit?
No? I'm thinking about the veto.
The veto power that the Zayin Tu Ve'Yair have? Yeah, so where do you want to draw us to? And that's why you need v'mamad zayin tuvit. That's why you need ruba mamad zayin ear. Debin and ro bas kamos tuvit ear. Okay, here's the line.
Yeah. If you take a ro, v'inan v'hadayu tuvit ear, shem rashi ear, the chachma v'ear as fate, yehech delitzu de taknisu have takana, v'lo kalkal. V'afilu avi tuvit ear, v'inan ro.
Saying neither is sufficient on its own.
Yeah.
So you see, as Chayyim is pointing out in this line, the Mabit makes an interesting argument that the Haskama of Rov B'nei Ha'ir itself would not be binding on Kol B'nei Ha'ir. Right? So you need Ruban B'maimad Zayin Tu Ve'Ha'ir. So the thought is, I guess this is Rumi's, you could read this, Rumi, maybe this is part of what you're getting at. Once it all just depends on the Haskamas B'nei Ha'ir, why do you care if... you have the Zayin Tu Ve'Ha'ir Hamamunim. I think Romy's point is still separate, because Romy's point is, once you know that the Rov rejected it, what's the significance of the Minoi? Which is an interesting question, meaning, would the Mabit ever concede that there's a case that the leaders can make a Takana against the veto power of their constituents? That's your issue. Tzchar, you're pointing out that the Mabit is not a pure majoritarian, right? Because he thinks it's necessary to have the Zayin Tu Ve'Ha'ir. So why is that?
Because the rov can tie something, but it's actually a kill kol ha'ir, and the Tu Ve'Ha'ir can veto it.
Yeah, so Tafilu ika rov, be'inan bahadayu Tu Ve'Ha'ir, shehem roshe ha'ir b'chachma, ve'ir aschet, ki hechi delechzu did takanasayu havi takana velo kalkala. So Ned, does that allay your concerns?
A bit.
Right, because he's thinking that the majority, there's some veto power that the Tu Ve'Ha'ir have, assuming that they are the, you know, Gedolim B'chachma B'Yir Aschet. That's against what we saw in, I think it was the Mizrahi, who says that the Tu Ve'Ha'ir are not the Gedolim B'chachma, over Yiras Chait or just the Uskin Bitzarchi at Zibor? He's clearly assuming that the two veya year are like the knowledgeable people who could give you guidance on, I guess, social issues and on Averos and what's halachically correct. It's an interesting check. He doesn't really develop it. I guess every town just has their two veya year, right? Who are have to, like, I guess, like courts. Like, you have seven people who have veto power on legislation. Right?
Doesn't that undermine his whole point?
To have somebody who could undermine, somebody who could veto the Koach
Ben Yair? It's like a cycle. Like, they can't limit them, but they can veto them, and they can...
I think the thought is that...
I mean, only because it isn't clarified what's considered a kill.
Right. Those are not clear what kind of power... I mean, it says it has to be Ben-Mah-Mah to be a year... So that they could see whether it's constructive or destructive. He's not, I guess it's hard. You would say that this is a clear veto power, right? Because what else does it mean? Right? Right. Well,
I think it means that the veto power is like
Kala. Right? That's what you would say.
Right. As in it should be applied kind of objectively. So it's not just like they don't like this. It
yeah.
should be like, this is not a Takana.
Right. I would say conceptually speaking, he clearly thinks the B'nai Ha'ir have the koach to make a takana. So if you're asking in whom does the authority reside, it resides in the B'nai Ha'ir. But you have Ned's concern. So let me say, the authority of the B'nai Ha'ir is only L'takana Sa'ir. So you need someone who could decide whether or not they have authority on this issue. Right? There's no reason the B'nai Ha'ir don't have authority L'kalkel Sa'ir. Right, in the same way that you don't have authority to harm yourself or destroy yourself. So the way I would read this is that the sovereign power of Bezdin or whatever you want to call it, Takana power, lies in the B'nai Ha'ir. But of course, only Litzarche Ha'ir. Who gets to decide whether this is Litzarche Ha'ir? So you have Zion Tuve Ha'ir who get to weigh in on that question. I think that's a nice solution to your problem, Romy. Or not?
Yeah, I don't really... Like, it seems then like it's a formality that the B'nai Ha'ir actually have that power. Because again, well, what if they decide that, you know, it's not Tzarchei Ha'ir? I mean, what does that mean, Tzarchei Ha'ir? Anything that they deem good is allowed?
Well, he says, Ki'echi delefzu de takana asai, you have a takana velo kalkala.
Right.
They're trying to make a takana, which is the betterment of the town. So you need somebody to actually ensure that this is for the betterment. Right.
Yeah, but then it's essentially like everybody's interested in the benefit of the town. So what we're essentially saying is that the
but who knows what's truly for the benefit of the town?
Is the power for like you know the formal name the B'nai Ha'ir make the decisions, but the you know the two B'nai Ha'ir are like they're like kind of adults who like make sure that you know you really made the right decision.
Is that a problem? You're saying that's problematic?
Well, it just means that. It's not actually saying that.
It's kind of how it works in the U.S. No?
It's the Electoral College, right?
No, or it's more like the courts that will review the legislation and say whether or not it falls in the jurisdiction of the government. No?
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think this is a bad paradigm.
No, yeah.
Ned, you want to...
Yeah, the earlier line that I pointed out about where the robe seems to, there needs to be an adam chashur b'nayim that kind of to substantiate their position.
That this line, no?
The earlier line, much earlier.
Okay, how much earlier?
Like in the previous paragraph, in the middle of the paragraph.
Okay.
The line starts with the rachman is the rachman.
Oh, here?
Yeah.
But Pirish Kashav Arashra Vichuva that the Rabbi Yerucham brings, Devadei Tzarech Rov Atzibor Shegazru Vehechrimu Vyesh Adam Chashuv Talmechachem Uparnas Beneihem. He's quoting a Chuvah Sarashba there.
Yeah.
Okay, and you're asking?
No, I'm saying that that's a different approach. I mean, where the rogue has to substantiate their opinion by having the...
Yeah, but that's consistent with what the Mabit himself says about requiring the Zion Tuvei Yair to serve that function, no? Yeah, it's similar. I mean, Adam Chashev is not occupying a different place than the Zion Tuvei Yair, is he? Josh?
Yeah, I think because it's saying that you have the Tuvei Yair, and then you have the Kal, and the Kal also needs a valid person on their team, no?
No, I think the Zion Tuvei Yair are also part of the Kal, just they get to direct whether it's That's how I understood it. Well, see, the Adam Chashev comes from our Gemara in Daf Ches. In Babasa, we're going to see that, so hold off on that thought. Okay, everybody who doesn't like Shuvos, you can now wake up. So that's, unless any other diukim in the Mabit. So I think the Mabit is just very important for pointing out, again, the authority of the Kahal in both requiring them to expressly designate authority for this type of takana to the Zion Tuvei Yair. And if they didn't, then no takana is valid without the express approval of the Bnei HaYir. Okay, so let's now move to that's it. That's really what I wanted to cover for the relationship between the authority of the Kahal itself and its representatives. Let's now move to the Drasha Saran and Drush Yud Aleph. Who saw this? Who had a chance to prepare this? Kobe, you see it? Benji, you see it? No? Ariel, did you get to it yet?
I don't believe so.
The Drasha Saran? Eitan, did you get to it yet?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ned, you got to it? Not yet. Ezra, you get to it? No. Josh, you get to it? Drasha Saran? Daniel, did you say you got to it? No? You guys are stuck in the Chuvas?
Yeah, we got stuff.
Okay. The Chuvas are always very long. But so let's break into the Drasha Saran. It's a very great, very famous, very insightful Drasha Saran. So the main thing he starts darshaning on Shoftim Veshotim Titein Lecha. And let's see how he opens. He says, here's Pshat in the Pasuk. Who's our volunteer for this? Dov, you want to lead us? Okay, so every society needs social and political leadership. Are we in agreement? Because what's going to happen if you don't have that? People are going to kill each other. The society is going to be destroyed. So we need Yishuv Medini. Like Yishuv Medini just means literally political organization. Correct? And political authority. Acha Amar HaChacham, I think, I mean, who this is? Who's the Chacham?
I would guess Aristotle
also. I actually think it's Rabbi Yehuda Levi, unless Rabbi Yehuda Levi and the Kuzari poached it from Aristotle. But I think it comes from Rabbi Yehuda Levi. So this is a great phrase. Shekat HaListim. Yeah. Which I think that means that even a band of robbers needs some rules to get along. Right, because any political or social entity needs some way of guiding its decision making, keeping people in check. Yes, okay. Go on, be Israel. So Jews need this just like any other nation. So do we all agree that we need some political and social organization leadership? Yeah. Sometimes you walk into Jewish communities and you think that maybe like they don't think that we need it. But I think as a general rule, it's probably true that Yisrael Tzrichim Lezek Yasser Umas. Now, and here's where he starts his Chiyushim come in, but Milvadze... Okay, so he starts off by saying, I'm going to erase this, and I want to just be precise here in charting the different terms that he uses. So he says, look, there's Yishuv Medini. How are we going to translate that?
Any sort of organization.
political betterment, right? Public good. And that's one value. And then, he says, so the Jews need this just like anybody else. But then there's a tziba cheres. What's the tziba cheres? Let's just say, chukei ha-Torah. Yes? To keep the rules of the Torah in force. And he gives examples. Chai ben Malkias, Chai ben Mrs. Bezdin. Okay. And these need to be enforced. Here's the crucial line. Even when, Dov, imheyos.
There's no actual political benefit.
Or political harm. Meaning the law, the chukei ha-Torah need to be enforced even when they don't come to any detriment to political or social organization. Okay? So somebody who murders, I'm not sure how you'd have such a case, but ought to be put to death even if the murder creates no harm to society. Right?
And I thought it sounded like literal chukei, like someone's going around wearing kalayim.
Or like rather a Shabbos, no?
So you mean like specifically...
I'm just saying I think like he's going that far, so even if. Like.
Okay. Then go on.
The insufficient to become a man is telling me is down to Shemian. Echad, the Chayba, and his Shazer is to be Mishbat Miti. Shemi Shemian Rabel, he showed to Mishbat Sudin Amiti. About the Chayba, and he showed to be taken Seder Midian. Did you need to be Zorah Hashara?
Okay, so notice, he says there are some cases where it's not appropriate to kill somebody or punish somebody. Kifi mishpat sodek amiti. So which side does that fall on? Which side? Yeah. He then lines up this idea of sodek. I think it's been true justice. Yeah. But there is a reason to punish somebody. Kifi tikun seder medini ukfit tzorech hashah. So do you guys agree with that? So he's saying that there's a set of cases where there's a necessity of punishing somebody just based on yishuv medini, but not based on tzodek amiti. Is that a coherent category to you guys?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I can see somebody saying, well, if it's not just, then there's no way that. Yeah, if it's not just, then there's no reason to think that Yishuv Medini would justify harming the person. And the Rans, do you already see that view? So like you might say the death penalty, let's take the death penalty for an example, you might say morally speaking the death penalty is always wrong. Right? I don't know if that's our view, but you might say that. But then you'll say, oh, that's from a moral point of view. But as a deterrent to keep people from doing bad things in society, we really need to keep the death penalty. That's like what the Ron's arguing. He's saying, it's coherent to concede that it's wrong from the perspective of tzedek amiti, but yet to think it's right from the perspective of its social utility. I think that's a controversial view. It doesn't mean it's wrong, but it does seem to me controversial. You might think that if it's not kifit tzedek amiti, then there's no reason why Yishuv Medini should justify it. Sorry.
I read the category of what fits into tzodek amiti is much more narrow, as in the example he gives later about like the murderer who doesn't have like a perfect hasra, while according to quote unquote tzodek amiti, he doesn't get killed. But according to Yishuv, he does. So as in there's some level of mishpat to you gotta kill this guy. But he's just kind of equating with can you
be
based in
tzodek amiti. I hear your reading, but the Ramban explicitly says that it's not just to kill somebody unless they knew that what they were doing is giving mechayev the misa. Right. So once he's
I think he's trying to give like an internal.
You're saying he's chayav misa, but there are like procedural barriers.
I think he's saying that there's a local like internal system where like here's all the principles of halacha and din, and according to din, he doesn't deserve to be killed.
Right.
And there's some svara behind that of like maybe on some level, you know, someone has to agree, but no one would say like, oh, misa di shamayim that Hashem wouldn't kill him. Like yeah, Hashem, yeah, strike him down. You know. Like,
ah. See, I read it as more absolute. I read it as he's conceding this point that there's no tzodek amiti basis, but yet he's embracing social utility.
Totally
basis. Yeah, exactly. Just that. Dope?
I'm not sure if it's that controversial. It seems to be basically assuming that there's some...
He says, Ein roi la nisho kefi mishpatei.
Some sort of kind of ideal morality with where you don't take into account any practical benefit. And when we do, like, there's no reason to assume that practical benefit is necessarily outside of the scope of morale.
So you're saying these categories are not as absolute.
As in, he's creating this sort of distinction for a purpose, but it ends up, being a lot less controversial because that most other people would include that practical benefit of it within the...
Within the Tzodek Amiti.
The question of the practical... the question of this will get returned, but it seems to be something that will not be included within, if you evaluate morality.
Yeah. See, I want to come, but let's look at his formulations to see if your interpretation is feasible. I see him as saying, no, there's two separate things. The answer under Chukei Torah and Tzodek Amiti is absolute. No, he's not Chai Misa. Ein ro'i la'onsho, he said. That's a very strong phrase, right? It would be inappropriate to punish him.
You can't, the emphasis doesn't mean that in the full literal sense that it's not proper punishment. He's saying that people are supposed to punish.
Well, from the person, given the social utility. Given the social utility.
That's sort of the point. I mean, he's just considering it without that perspective of social utility, and I don't see any real...
See, I think his whole argument to separate the powers of who presides over Yishuv Medini and who presides over Tzodek Amiti is to say that they don't overlap. Right? It's not that. Oh, because of the Tikkun Medini, now the Tzodek Amiti requires...
I don't think it's that controversy that ideally we wouldn't need to take into account the Turing's perspective or something like that, and be able to acknowledge it on its own merit, but practically speaking, we do, and that's fine.
Okay.
To some degree, I think it is more his basic approach.
Okay. Romy, you didn't follow up on this, or?
No, I agree with you.
With me?
Yeah.
See, Dove?
I think.
Do you agree with me from the perspective of Tzodek Amiti, or from like the?
Because otherwise, you basically end up saying, even if you say what Dove's saying, the difference is whether or not Yishuv Medini has any limitation. So even according to what Dove is trying to say, which is that still kind of like it theoretically does fit into, you wouldn't think it was such a big kiddush if it was just under the category of Chukei Torah. That's because it was under the category of Chukei Torah, there would be some limitations to under what, you know, what
circumstantial limitations to how you're
not given the Ran that have any limitations. Meaning, it seems from, like from the Ran, it seems like there are no limitations to the Yishuv Medini, whatever the king decides to do, as long as it's a different Torah.
Well, let's see. Let's read a little more. So the Ran says, and here's the, I think where it really gets interesting. Notice also Kfitzora Chasha implies that Yishuv Medini really varies much more, right? So there's no, it's not a hard and fast rule, like different societies will require different deterrents, right? So it's much more flexible. Vashem Yisbarach, go ahead, Dov. So he separated the authorities, right, to different groups. One authority is designated to whom, so... Oh. So the Shoftim are tasked with true justice. Go on. Very nice, Diak. Yeah, so notice he says that the Shoftim's power is circumscribed to this thing, right? It's like they don't have the authority to consider Yishuv Medini considerations. They're not authorized to do so by the Torah. And then he says, and here's also a fascinating... So the fascinating thing here is the argument that Mishpat Tzedek Amiti Ba'atzmo is insufficient to achieve Sidur HaMedini. Like that's a really fat. So the idea is that the Torah's conception of what's intrinsically just is not capable of creating efficient or good society.
It's basically splitting ethics from politics.
Yeah, that's right. Which is pretty surprising. Sometimes you might think, and one might take the point you made a few minutes ago as being, a truly just system is one that creates the right type of society, right?
Yeah.
And the Ran is denying that. The Ran's saying, no, it's precisely because Mishpat Tzedek Amiti Ba'atzmo doesn't achieve a Yishuv Medini. That's why the Torah has to allocate power to the Mitzvah Melech. Right, so it's the two of these together that are in tension or need to be balanced in some way, and that's how you create like the right type of society overall. Okay? And it seems to be even that like the Ran doesn't say this explicitly yet, but like these powers are intentionally allocated to different authorities because maybe they require different types of decision making. Ashar, you had a comment on this?
I think he's like softening the blow by saying all this is l'chachila, Hashem is instituting these things to literally be secondary, and it's really fine that the shoftim aren't really accomplishing social order. But don't worry, that's part of the plan.
Right.
I think if you just said this outright, it would be shocking.
You think so?
Yeah, it's kind of like Kasha Lilei Fala Din. I think it's like a great analogy. It's like, Din doesn't really solve the problems a lot of times. Like,
it's very consistent with that.
But also there's Pshar. Like, if you don't, it's a Walt Pshar.
He's like a Makdim Refuah L'Mako.
That's right.
I mean, the Mitzvah Melech is the Refuah?
Yeah.
Right. He's saying there's another thing that...
There's nothing B'dievet about having the Mitzvah Melech.
Right. There's nothing B'dievet.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I agree with that.
If you have this conception coming in that Din is the whole system of Torah, and then you say, well, Din doesn't accomplish all these obvious goals, you're in trouble.
Exactly. So I agree with that perspective. Josh?
I was saying, I feel like Tzedek Amiti by itself is enough if everybody believes in the Torah and tries to follow it. But meaning, if everyone reads the Torah and sees that God doesn't want you to kill people, then if they believe that, then that is enough.
So you're saying, what are the conditions? You're saying maybe in a truly idealized society.
Like, I think that's conceivable. That if everyone's society is religious, then nobody would kill people, whether or not they're actually going to end up getting caught with doing it.
So you're pushing back on Zachariah's point a little bit. You're saying, the ideal halakhic society is just...
If everyone buys them, no?
So you could tie us into an ideal society wouldn't need a melech, right? It's like that. If there are no Jewish criminals, something like that. That's a very interesting perspective. I don't think you're right. But I like the theory, even if I think it's incorrect. Meaning I think...
Because it's not feasible?
Well, also just because so much of Mishpat Tzedek Amiti is about criminals. Right, and like the ganav had upon it, like had a ganav, and like this is already assuming an unideal society.
Right.
You have to say there's tzvei dinim and unideal. There's like unideal mitzah and mishpat avid. Right, but then I think you lose the force of your point already. Right,
ideal society is not a society of ideal people. It's the ideal way to have a society of normal people.
Yes, correct.
There's no reason to assume that an ideal society is the one constructed around a bunch of ideal people, because that already kind of completely unnecessary.
100%. Can we go 30 more seconds? Are you guys ready to...
I don't mind.
So, I'm like the apotropis here, but if like Rov HaKol, should put it to a vote? Do you guys want to stop? Stop?
What do you mean by 30 seconds?
All right, we'll stop here. Once you have to ask the question, Benji, then it's time to stop. Okay, so can everybody just prepare the rest of the Drashas HaRan very carefully for next year? Because you can see there's really a lot of rich stuff embedded here.
Next year is Wednesday?
Yes.
There's more than 30 seconds.